Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Masonic Effect on this fifth day of December 2021. A long time ago, I stopped mentioning the dates of each session because it was like you would know the date if it would matter to you or not. What difference does it make? I was realizing at the time that it didn't really make much difference at all, whether it was something produced in the July of 2015 or October of 2017. It didn't really matter. The ideas were just standalone and fluid and It was beginning to emerge. It was a beginning of emergence of my way of thinking about Masonry. It became more and more defined. So welcome to all my brethren and of all gender. Let me say that, please. I'm not so superior to be ascribing notions of gender to my God. I wouldn't think to be on that level to understand. I struggle at times with this sense of legitimacy or having a true grasp of something beyond metaphysics. I can't really form it. I always like the idea that if I'm thinking in the terms and the way of creator, it's probably smug of me to think that the creator uses the same language that I do. Convenient, isn't it? Just a little too convenient. Nah, I'm still part of that Copernican experiment, the notion, a theory. I used to be it so long, can we say? Remember, up until then, the world was the center of the universe because Scripture had described it that way. And I guess the part that they erased at the end of that was, hey, boys and girls, this is a metaphor, so take it in that context and apply it to your general. But they forgot that, so the literalist went wild. Here's the proof we need. It's right there in front of us. It's the spirit. It's the spirit. It wasn't sophistry. I think we had some writers that talked about what was going on in the breast. You know, that's that sense of awareness and understanding that comfort levels today and from here on, I'm going to be talking about the absolute joy of understanding and coming to grips with this beautiful, beautiful notion of Freemasonry. It's in the air that we breathe. If you absorb Freemasonry, it's in the air. It's how we think. It's a power, as awkward as it is to think about that at times, that puts a smile on your face. And it's wonderful. It's reinforcing when, unbeknownst to the world around, you are able to put a smile on the face of someone else, or even to help a person, whether that be grudging or not. Remember, you easily remember that unwanted effort. Here, I'm going to help you. I tend to see it and have seen it more being imposed on young people, particularly young women. Here, I'm going to do this for you and just sit back and it's the right thing to do. I'll do your thinking for you. The insult here, of course. I'll do your thinking for you and I'll describe your purpose. And the nicest, the sweetest bit of hypocrisy is, and I'm only doing it for you. Well, ego is what ego is. We're not going to do that here. People stand on their own. And there are people that we readily admit have had a very desperate time in life and do need a hand up. And it makes us good people. It makes you feel good. And I do believe, I do have a sense that my enemy was onto something when he was talking about this ability to help a person, in a sense of describing, breaking down what charity is. And he made this point, and I apologize profusely for paraphrasing to beat the bat, but it's the only way that I can understand at that time. It's to be able to give a person a means to be able to support themselves or to be able to facilitate. That's wonderful. You know, the story of the fisherman. You can fish for people, or you can teach people how to fish for themselves. Wonderful. Bad metaphor these days, I guess. We've come to the practical reality. Always we have no battle with scholarship. Certainly not. It's coming to terms that the scholarship won't necessarily agree, nor will I necessarily agree with a perfect stranger. But an important but, if we have the wisdom or awareness of tolerance, or in our virtuous frame of reference in our lodges, temperance, patience, we find that ideas are not necessarily ruthless or good or bad as much as out of time. Some ideas I've come across, I hope never have a time. They are ideas that makes us part of what we are and who we are. And there are ideas that are psychotic. That's just that's the nature of the practical reality. We do have some animals that are born with difficulties, with gaps. But we know to support the person. We protect them from themselves and from other people. The original asylums were like that way, way back in the day. The monks created them to protect the people who were sick from us. Yeah, asylum. You went there for safety. You were brought there for safety because you were odd and you were peculiar and you attracted attention. And we didn't like that. So we would hurt and harm and belittle and exploit. Sometimes I feel quite naive with this sense of disappointment that, you know, but it is real. That, you know, we haven't apparently progressed from then, but my goodness, yes, we have. Yes, we have. We progressed from the day when we would do that, when we were bear baiting at the festival, and we'd bring our best hunting dogs and sick them on the bear and win, and we would bet, we would wager, and the dog that eventually killed the poor beast, wow, grounds for celebration. Well, we've progressed because we examine things with that, what do you call it, the moral basis, but whose morality, huh? So we get to look at facets all the time. The light that shines, whatever light of awareness there is bright, but it's reflected. It's reflected light. It's like looking into a diamond. You see the sparkle is the reflected light. Huh? That's the way I think of morality. If we're looking for light and insight, it's refracted and reflected. And again, the tolerance helps us to appreciate that. Not be so judgy. The joy, men don't act foolish. Or if they do, they apologize and they're aware of it. That's good men. Good men don't tolerate the aggression in others. No, I'm sorry, don't. Not in our circles, they don't. They don't tolerate political alliances. You know, we look, 2021 is coming to an end, and we're getting hammered with these messages that cliques don't really work. Ooh. Everywhere you look, somebody's pointing out a wrongness or a slight, and everybody's right. To what extent? Well, we can pull down monuments, but we aren't too good at pulling down the messaging behind them. What has changed is the sense of hopelessness. It's not that sense of optimism that moves us forward, this audacious way of thinking that we can resolve these issues. And I believe that we do. I do. It's an imperfect kind of process. I wouldn't say you're looking at linearity here at all, but more spirals. We'll circle around the issues and we'll eventually work to the betterment of the greater good. Here, I hope that you will find your indulgence, your way of indulging. That I don't mean to your get out of jail card from a pope. I mean to express, to find expression, the music within you, to find that sense of life spirit, that life force. And hopefully, for me, you'll find that through the practices of speculative Freemasonry. And it almost sounds unartistic when I put it that way, doesn't it? The practices. Well, if you you can beat on a drum and that can be your music, or you can pick up a baton and lead your orchestra, that can be the music. The right and the wrong, I don't have that sense anymore. I've seen and experienced a lot of things, and right and wrong and morality, I'll leave that in the hands of you. You're better at judging that. I worry because I don't know how productive that is. How do you employ these things to move into the future in a different way? And that's the hope of the mathematician, isn't it? That's the hope. Imagine that what we're going through now may include and probably does include some understated brilliance. And in hindsight, if only we had known, this will become known and made aware to all of us. A little treat today is if we've worked that theme into the poetry that I'm going to be sharing with you in a little bit. Emily Dickinson. Yeah, that Emily Dickinson. Interesting, but I think you'll see the point is made. We've got, if I ever hint that there's something about masonry that we must do, please. Tell me otherwise. There's nothing we must do. I guess we must breathe. We must be friendly. We must be generous. We must be content. Really? Who said so? Well, I say so. It's because they're lovely ideas. They're lovely ideas. We must like poetry. Oh, my. If we want to set somebody up, we start with that injunction. You must. But listen to the context here. You must come and visit. I'd love nothing better than make dinner. We'll listen to some music. We'll have a few drinks. We'll relax. I must find time to call you more often. It's the context is different. When you're talking to a friend, you must. Yes, of course. We must make a time to get tickets to go to that hockey together. Well, lovely. It's don't be foolish to think that the point is the hockey game. It's that shared interest and the companionship and the time together and the experience, your create experience. And my goodness, a long time ago, I realized masonry does that for me and a lot of people. It creates experiences for us that some people don't have the imagination for all by themselves, and the type of experience that require that chemistry, people that are new, people that are familiar, people that are working to define a common purpose. Lovely. And out of that you know that you have that spontaneity, somebody over there might be quarreling with their family, but over here on this side of the audience, it's this absolute connection with the playwright, with the performance. It's exquisite. Who's to say it's all part of that perfection, that the beauty, that connection, whether we see it as oppositional or forces, or maybe you're just out there noticing that the entire universe is based on fractal geometry, whatever. The conversation becomes much more enriched because you're part of it, because you bring the uniqueness of your own perspective. No need to be defensive. To be able to say there's something I don't know is not uncommon. Be able to say things that I don't understand is not uncommon. But if you say that and then people press you, you can say, well, get those qualifiers. If you're not looking for perfection, I do have lots of opinions, and a lot of them are ideas, just if nothing else, to elevate a conversation, because that's the joy of connecting, knocking heads together and sharing ideas. But with masonry, oh my goodness, there seems to be a tipping point, and I'm not altogether sure what the hell it is, where people from all over the world are able to experience that. Is it a sense of elation? No, if I say a frisson, I might say, though, a sense of awareness that makes them feel very happy. Joy. Joy. Not giggles, not locker room. My goodness, I've seen too much of that over here. It's embarrassing. No. The joy that one sees when you're looking at, you're with a person who has that grace about them, that not avoidance, not aggression, you know, that male, that silly, that ego-driven nonsense. Somebody that is living the good life, doesn't seem to be particularly troubled, can focus their thoughts and control their emotions. Well, masonry isn't the what. You know, here's the command. This is what you need to do. It's also the how. It's the how of it all. And when I read, you know, something about the ancient philosophers saying, you know, if I live a good life, if I live according to virtues, if I live a virtuous life, I'll find happiness. Well, I don't know if the old sod is right or wrong, but I'm willing to give it a shot. What if I don't achieve my sense of that creative happiness? What if I don't, but I'm much better at the end of this than I am now? What if? It's sort of this process of refinement that goes on from, you know, the metaphor, Ashler metaphor, you know it. What if, and I tend to think, you know, it's like suspend this idea that this is memory work. This is awareness. All right, genius. Okay, so genius, tell me the thought. Is there are we talking about originality, or are we talking about the way you put the notes together, the timing? What is it here? You it's not original unless you're the first. Really, how humbling of you to allow the rest of us in on your little secret. It's whether you find something intriguing and invest yourself, and whether you alone find joy in that, satisfaction in that, at whatever level. My goodness, don't ever let the likes of me define that for you. My goodness, no, you do that, and it's perfectly fine. It's perfectly fine because it's within you. If you're temperate, if you're tolerant of yourself, you realize when there is struggles, and it takes a while to be, think of it, to be in the mood to write, to be in the mood to think these comforting thoughts. And that requires of you and I patience with ourselves. We're not usually encouraged to think this way. We're usually encouraged to think on demand. If a problem is posed, we need an on-demand solution, on-demand explanation of some high degree of expertise, of course. Life actually doesn't really exist in that same sphere of on-demand. The on-demand would be, give me some time to think about this. Or, that's complicated. or I've given that a bit of thought, and I'm still not sure about the final conclusions, but this is my reasoning along that path. What you think is important. But along with what we think being important, there's the fit with other people. We call that dignity and reputation. You know, how do you come across with other people? Do you have a capacity for intimacy or not so much? That's all right. That's all right. You could live quite a good life and not know the joys of that. And if you're a person that does, don't necessarily think everybody around you is capable of that. That's unique to you. And you could satisfy that on so many levels. So masonry is more, the more you get into it, I think, the more fluid it becomes. And the resolution of this, here's one of the most remarkable tasks or problems that we're given, is how to reconcile this notion of science, the new religion, with the old religion, this faith. How do you reconcile that? Well, I won't even venture to go down that road. No, are you kidding? That may come in another 10 years, I don't know. But in the meantime, I would like you to sit back and share the indulgence of masonry that comes from my mind. I'd like to share that with you again today. And I want to thank you, the many, many listeners who've been tuning in. Thank you. It's very gratifying. It really is. And that I like to think that I've made a contribution in some small way to your day or to your sense of yourself as a Freemason. The tensions and nonsense have nothing to do with masonry. That has everything to do with the baggage that guys bring, people bring, the brethren bring from the many years in the profound world, the many years of clamoring to compete against the world and to adjust their morality to suit their convenience. So let's be patient. I might like to even suggest that we change our maybe when I'm talking to an applicant in the future, I'll begin by asking him to tell me about the music that he listens to. What's his favorite music and why? At least to let him know that analysis is a part, big part of masonry. And if nothing else, I'd like to see what type of music he likes. Not all judgy, but curiosity. Now, enough. The curiosity here is we're launching this with a bit of music, very interesting poetry, a commentary that, if I do say so myself, I like it. I get to say that when I wrote it. Bill Evans, this is live from Tokyo. Check this. Soothing, eh? People at one with their instrument, with the music, and with each other, the performance. Exquisite. I wanted to unravel something that we hint at in masonry occasionally. The matter of the transformation of what I was to what I could be, better, good men, better. Oh, I know that's contentious, but bear with me. It's the premise. Is Freemasonry somehow transformative? Well, I guess it depends how you qualify that. Yeah, how you qualify it. What do you consider good? Well, some people don't examine that. Some, you know them, which is their prerogative. And better is what they say it is, which again is their prerogative. But out there, we have this sense of objective reality and truths. And it's fraught, yes, of course. But we don't make up reality. Or do we? No, I'm not going to go down that path. We'll come back to that. This damn Freemasonry slippery path, isn't it? We need to at least appreciate this idea of transformation. Good man, better. Something happens. Is this the catalyst? Is this the whatever has Alice turned at the rabbit hole and given us a sip? And we're down the rabbit hole together with all these explorations. You know, is that what this is? Is this, we're down that rabbit hole now? Does Freemasonry change a person? No. As intriguing as it is as a subject, efficacy becomes increasingly possible with an increased awareness and then mastery of guiding principles. For men who are readers, for people that we put there, it comes easier than for people who have yet to learn how to read and study. I don't say that mockingly. I remember back not so many years ago when I hadn't studied for a long time, or perhaps you could say I hadn't really learned how to study properly, and I had to learn how to do it again. And there is a process to it. I won't get into that here. If you're interested, and it's like that gradual acceleration, you know, the you're doing 100 meters. Do you burst out of the blocks at the same as you hit the ribbon? No. So, as intriguing as it is a subject, efficacy becomes easily possible with increased awareness. It becomes easier than for men who have not yet learned to read and study. Easier. I don't say it's the bee's knees, but it's easier. Before you dismiss me out of hand, think about it. Studying any subject in an organized way requires learning to digest information assigned to us. It is not what we find interesting or entertaining in the moment. It is a task necessary to achieve our goal. It's like the difference between reading because of something that interests you and reading because it advances your thinking or your knowledge. Freemasonry is as much about mastering ways to absorb information as it is a process of elevating our ambitions and goals by positioning ourselves according to philosophical arguments. Fortunate amongst us may have had guidance and support from others. The majority will need to rely on being a self-directed learner who realizes if he doesn't organize his thinking, no one else will do it for him. He can remain a grotty little sod his whole life, or refine his thinking and manners, hoping to find compatibility with others who are personable and able to learn our defining traditions. Many of them are interactive. A thought experiment is insufficient when we are tasked in our attitudes toward others. Masonry draws us out according to ability. Of course it does. It's an odd experience, realizing all of us can be described on a normal distribution curve. What do the mathematicians know that they hesitate to share? Or what do we know that we don't want to admit? Where am I on that distribution curve? I don't know if it's static. We are doing well in life if we are entertaining the possibility of improved existence. I guess that's hope. Or is that some people tell me that's arrogant, that for every problem we arrogantly assume that there's an answer or solution? But you can have problems without going that far. In our own way, with what we have, to find joy and satisfaction is valuable. It spreads a feeling of well-being and hope to others. Doing what we can to help others is a beautiful thing. Doing those things because they are the right thing to do, that's affirming. People are trustworthy. Strangers are like us, at least according to the sociologists and statisticians. Fear and aggression do not define humanity. Peace and love. Oh, my. That was for fans of Duke Ellington and Charlie Mingus and Max Roach. Solitude. Remarkable. Just remarkable. I'm going to share something else that's remarkable. But he introduced you to a poet that I greatly admire. Just hearing her described this way made me much more interested in her than her actual, even before I began reading her work. That was a long time ago. Let me just share a bit of this and you decide. This is a woman writer, Emily Dickinson. And I'm picking up an analysis of her from the Guardian newspaper. Some of you may have, I've been subscribing to it since it was introduced to me from an acquaintance that I made back in university days about 1973, believe it or not, 74. I didn't have much. I could get a copy of Hansard. Back then, you get a copy of Hansard free. That's the Record of Parliament. And so I did. And every day I would get the transcriptions of what had happened in the House. Well, the government put an end to that because it was just too useful. It was too helpful. It was still, your MP gets two copies or maybe three. So if he's not using or she or not using one of the copies, you might ask them if they'd send that along. Although they might send it along to the area bench or what have you. Back to Emily Dickinson. She was a great poet, reminded. And her life has remained a mystery. Oh, well, got my attention. The time has come to dispel the myth of a quaint, helpless creature disappointed in love who gave up on life. And the writer thinks that she was unafraid of her own passions and talents, and that her brother's betrayal and subsequent family feud had a profound effect on the Dickinson legend that's come down to us. And perhaps most significantly, that Emily had an illness, a secret that explains a great deal. It was Emily herself who helped to devise the blueprint of her legend, starting at the age of 23 when she declined an invitation from a friend. She said, "I'm so old-fashioned, darling, that all your friends would stare." In place of the tart young woman she was, she adopted this retiring posture. Born in 1830 to the leading family of Amherst, this is a college town in Massachusetts, she never left what she always called my father's house. On the face of it, the life of this New England poet seems uneventful and largely invisible, but there's a forceful, even overwhelming character belied by her still surface. She called it a still volcano life. And that volcano rumbles beneath the domestic surface of her poetry at 1,000 letters. Stillness was not a retreat from life, as legend would have it, but her form of control. Faith, as she said, she got into it with the matron of the school that she went to, Holyoke, Mount Holyoke. And the founder was a formidable Mary Lyon, L-Y-O-N. And at the time, Massachusetts was going through this religious revival, opposing the inroads of science. Can't have too much science. Well, what's changed? Emily had also chosen all science, mostly science courses. So she says, faith is a fine invention when gentle men can see, but microscopes are prudent in an emergency. So when Ms. Lyon pressed her students to be saved, nearly all of them agreed to it. And Emily says on May 16th, I have neglected the one thing needful when all were obtaining it. It seemed that all other girls desired only to be good. How I wish I could say that with sincerity, but I fear I never can. Miss Lyon consigned her to the lowest of three categories. The first was the saved, the second the hopeful, and the remnant, about 30 of them, were called no hopers. And our Ms. Dickinson didn't renege. Anyway, she was surprisingly articulate. People that tried to mentor her were overwhelmed with the intensity. So anyway, let's sit back and see what you can find from this person who was shielding the world from the fact that she was sick. She talks about it in different ways. We think it was probably epilepsy, probably. But again, the woman had maintained her privacy, and there is the source of mystery. The poet was not to tell. That mystery of the poet was not to tell, and that continues even to this day. But there's different camps that have set up around. Let's tuck into this just a little bit and see what you think. Hey, this is her work called "Tis So Much Joy." Tis so much joy. Tis so much joy. Tis so much joy. If I should fail, what poverty? And yet, as poor as I have ventured all upon a throw, have gained, yes, hesitated, so this side the victory. Life is but life, and death but death. Bliss is but bliss, and breath but breath. And if I fail, at least to know the worst is sweet. Defeat means nothing but defeat. No drearier can befall. And if I gain, Gunnetsea or bells that in the steeples be, at first repeat it slow. For heaven is a different thing. Conjectured and waked sudden in, and might extinguish me. How can you read this poem and not recognize that Dickinson was a profound mystic? Yes, a mystic. In contrast to the conventional idea that she was morbid, heartbroken, recluse. Does that poetry sound like this is a heartbroken? 'Tis so much joy. What an ecstatic exclamation. The words just barely able to form themselves in the in an overwhelming experience. What is it that she's talking about when she asks alternatively, if I should fail and if I gain? It seems that she's referring to the exalted state of ineffable joy itself. The surprised recognition that she entered the heavenly state. The joy mentioned in the beginning is also the heaven with which she closes the poem. This is what she has gained by venturing all upon a throw of a dice. Eh? She's stunned. What have you got to lose? Go for it. Go for the joy. She is stunned by her success. She hesitates to believe it is even possible. And still, she humbly admits that she is poor and imperfect. Failure to her would be to not remain in the state of ecstatic communion. But she strengthens her determination to attain victory by recognizing that she has nothing else to pursue and nothing to avoid, nothing to desire or to fear. Life is but life and death but death. Things are simply as they are, and the mind need not project false judgments of good and bad on them, even on feet. Just to have gotten as far as she has, even if she ultimately fails, she has tasted that ethereal sweetness. So why fear failure? For heaven is a different thing, she says. Conjectured and waked suddenly with those lines, she is in her quiet way declaring that she is directly experiencing heaven in that moment and not indulging in mere imagination. She proclaims that heaven is a very different experience than what is conjectured or commonly imagined once you actually awaken into it. The authority of those lines is unmistakable. And yes, I would agree with that. And you? What do you think? I'm just amazed here. Trying to put together the final music for the show. And, you know, sometimes this little computer system doesn't work the way I want it to. Anyway, apart from that, endings are what they are. They're endings. I hope you... We're going to get around to some history before I kick you out the door. Yeah, I think you'll like this part. Yeah. We were talking about the guilds, weren't we? Yeah. We're talking about the reaction to them. Always a reaction. And it was really that struggle around faith. Faith and belief and fact. And not only that, but the outspokenness of of some people that needed that to be a battle. Didn't need to be. They made it to battle. The guilds out of which Masonry emerged in Scotland and England have been left behind. Although back in the 17th century, and maybe there is a sense of nostalgia about bringing this into our current conversation, but many of the ideas and the processes that were being talked about, the history is revealing in 18th century, are, I think, features elements that we can still find in our thinking and our function as Freemasons today. although back in the 17th century, an English gentleman, Mason, may have been admitted to the guild of practicing Masons in the Dutch city of Maastricht. That event, if it occurred, initiated no transformation in the submission practices of the Dutch stonemasons. The Dutch guilds possessed a long and honorable history, and in some industries they were still forces to be reckoned with well into the 18th century. But throughout continental Europe, where guilds continued to flourish in many countries, the imported society of Freemasons will not include hand workers. In the Netherlands, as elsewhere, the lodges became societies of the mercantile, the educated, the well-born or newly risen, in short, of men and eventually some women, of the professions, both civil and military, and not least, of the aristocratic and the leisured. Yet even among men of high birth, their membership in the fraternity could arouse deep hostility, even within their own families. The aristocratic Grand Master for the whole of Dutch Masonry wrote to his brothers in 1761 to explain, "It will not be possible for me to take advantage of your gracious invitation. I will be staying with some relatives who have not being initiated in our sublime mysteries and who even have terrible ideas about them. Next, we will try to figure out what some of those ideas might have been." The tensions. Do we admit them? Are they, if they exist, do we recognize them? Are we aware of them? And if we're not, what's that say about us? Is history just a vanishing act? Is it just a vanishing act? When it was yesterday, it's out of mind. Well, my goodness, it's like the weather. The weather yesterday is out of mind. This whole notion of climate, that has to do with too many people asking too many questions. There you go. Nothing more frank than that. Too much knowledge, too many ideas, too many thoughts. All of this just protects us. It gives us an opportunity to think through and reason. And if you don't want to, don't. Don't. Put cotton in your ears or turn up the music or isolate yourself. But that says much more about you than it does about the order. Well, this, so Freemasonry, I think at the door, we need to be able to ask in our own way, are you interested in the opportunity? Well, most people at that point will be highly motivated and they'll say, yes. Why? I need to know. Just a convenience, because it's esoteric. I guess those are reasonable points to make. But the inquiry, and I don't expect somebody to be able to probe Masonry from the outside until they experience it. What do you like? Are you impatient? Are you demanding? Are you judgmental? We can't handle that kind of thing. We can handle it, but it's tedious and it gets in the way. And before I get in the way, I'm going to say thank you very much for sitting in. And you guys from Turkey and Iran, I'm still glad that you're here. My goodness, yes. And Netherlands and Germany, I hope we've been entertaining with what's going on around the world. My goodness, I think if we can have a conversation that makes us feel like we're part of a big, big distant community, well, so be it. I think that's not a bad place to be. So for whatever your reason for sitting in and tuning in, I hope we've given you a bit of satisfaction. And in the meantime, I'm getting into that here where I am. The snows are mounting outside my door. I'll put another piece of wood on the fire it's not a cliche. That's just the life that I get to live here. And share in that imagery. I'm going to put on some more coffee, maybe a cappuccino, and sit back and relax. I hope you are able to be with friends over the next week. I hope you're able to feel enlightened, a little lighter in your loafers, that as you go about paying attention in your own way to the information that's all around you, if you're curious, if you haven't been curious, then my goodness, here, let me help you with that. Be curious. Your imagination doesn't go. That hasn't left you because of turning into an adult. You've just parked it. You put it in, put it away for a time. And but it never abandons us. In the meantime, enjoy, commit those acts of random Masonic kindness, and I hope to be with you again real soon.